ओम्ञानतिमिदन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनिशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नमः ॐ विष्णुताराय कृष्णप्रेषाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामी नामिने। नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे। नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिसिद्धान्त सरस्वती नाम्ने। श्रीवाशवानवीदेवी कविताय कृपातये कृष्णसम्बन्धविज्ञान दायिने प्रभवे नमः। माधुर्योज्ज्वलप्रेमाढ्या वीरूपानुगभक्तिता
गौर
गौर ईश्वर गौरशक्ति स्वरूपाय रूपानुगमनाय ते कृष्णाप सिद्धांत दहारिणे नमः। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास हरि गौरावृन्द। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा on outreach, on sharing Krishna consciousness with others. So, I'll talk about three points: the purpose of outreach, the perspective in outreach, and the process of outreach. Purpose, perspective, and process. And one of the most instructive and inspiring aspects in the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur for me was the address that he gave to his disciples when they were about to go abroad. It was a historic moment in the history of the Gaudiya Math. When in the 1930s, 1934, he sent his disciples first abroad. So these three quotes that I'll be speaking on are not directly from that lecture, but it is there. These three quotes broadly reflect the mood of that talk. And while explaining those quotes, analyzing those quotes, we'll give you some examples from Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's life, as well as from Srila Prabhupada's life, and from our situation also. And of course, ultimately, preaching is not just to be done to others. We have to preach to the soul inside this body also. So we'll see how these instructions apply to us in our own spiritual growth. An Acharya is known much more by their words than by their appearance or by their looks or anything like that. So focusing on their quotes is a, well, the wisdom that they have given through their quotes is a way by which we can carry on the legacy of wisdom with us. Many Bhaktisiddhanta Thakura appeared on the stage. We have probably heard most of his activities, his pastimes. So let's focus on his teachings and what we can learn from those teachings today. So, the first quote is, what is the purpose of when we are trying to share Krishna consciousness? What is the purpose? So I'll say this quote and you can repeat this quote after me. And I'll discuss the quote and then you can also repeat the quote. So that's all three quotes are the simple quotes. But he says that the only purpose of the most merciful persons is to transform the degraded taste of people. Can you repeat this? The only purpose of the most merciful persons is to transform the degraded taste of people. Yes. So, this just goes to the heart of what we are trying to do. Sometimes we get caught in the externals of outreach. Okay, how many books have I distributed? Okay, how many temples have we created? How many people are coming to the temple? How many people are getting initiated? How many people come for my classes? How many people are there in our temple? And how many are there in your temple? Then the externals are no doubt important. But if we get caught in the externals, sometimes we just become competitive. You know, oh, I distribute more than books than you. More people come to hear my classes than your classes. And or we may feel disheartened. We say, okay, you know, our temple, only a few hundred people come, but that church, that temple, thousands of people are coming there. So, are we in the right path or is there some other path? Maybe I should be going somewhere where most people are going. So like that, sometimes we get caught in the externals. But we are not here to just increase the ranks of an organization. We are not here although to convert people to our way of thinking. Our purpose is to transform the taste of people. Now, what do we mean by transform the, specifically says transform the degraded taste of people? All of us have an innate tendency to seek pleasure. And we all seek pleasure in different ways depending on the level of consciousness. So there are three modes, sattva, rajas and tamas. And based on these three modes, our conception of pleasure changes. Our taste changes. Say in terms of interpersonal relationship, we would want to say, people in tamas often get pleasure in causing pain to others. See, I have so much power to cause this much pain to you. So, that was what Mrigari was doing. His profession was hunting. But he was not just doing his profession. He was actually inflicting torture on animals and hurting them terribly. And he would just get joy. I say, I can cause you so much pain. That's a very, very horrendously degrading taste. So in passion, in ignorance, in tamas, we get joy in hurting others. Of course, tamas has many other aspects of it, but that's one example of a very, very distorted taste. In rajas, we may get taste in gross sensuality. Purification means to understand that the impure is impure. If we are not pure, we don't even understand that the impure is impure. That's the way what everybody is doing. That's what I'm also doing. So some people may just say, go to all kinds of sensual activities, say, as a normal way to live, everybody is doing like that. But the consideration of purity and impurity comes when there is some sattva. In sattva we can perceive, sarvabhare shude, esim prakasha upachayate, jnanam yadadata vidya duruddham sattva ityuta. So when our inner eye opens, when we can perceive what should go inside our senses and what should not go inside our senses, then what should come out of our senses, what should not come out of our senses. That means what we should see, what we should speak, what we should eat. When we start discerning this, that's when we come to goodness. Now here, it's not just a matter of self-control. In sattva, a person is naturally attracted to sattvic food. Is naturally not attracted to, say, meat or other kinds of rajasic, tamasic foods. So it's our taste is determined by our level of consciousness. And the process of bhakti is meant to transform the taste of people. It is meant to give people a higher taste. Like Vishnu Acharya Thakur says in a Bhagavata purport that there is no greater need in society than an urgent need to give people higher taste. So, if people can experience higher taste, then they will themselves start longing for it more. And once they start longing for it more, they will start moving on their spiritual journey. So the lasting benefit we can do to people is to transform their taste. And we think in these terms, the purpose of outreach is to transform the taste of people. Now taste can be in terms of pleasure. Taste can also be in terms of shelter. Everybody faces problems in life. Amidst problems, how do we respond? What do we take shelter of? Some people just start drinking. Some people just start watching a lot of TV. Some people just go to sleep. Some people just start overeating. But if at that time we take shelter of Krishna. So what we do for getting pleasure and what we do for getting shelter, these two broad things indicate where our taste lies. See, our life's journey is at one level, if you consider it like a time, a flow of time on the y-axis. You look back, say, I was born in 1975 or whatever, 1947, whatever, yeah. And you look back, if you look at our past life, it's not like a flat line. There are certain incidents which stand out like mountains. Some things which stand out like tall peaks. And others like a plateau. The incidents that stand out in our life are either the incidents of great pleasure or the incidents of great pain. And now what we do in those situations defines our life trajectory quite a bit. So transforming our taste is the purpose of preaching. Now, let's take a couple of examples from Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's own way of doing outreach. Often we know Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur as Simha Guru, as the uncompromising, strong speaker who presented Krishna Bhakti. Now, in general, no designation is a description in an exhaustive way. Every designation, it designates something. The person is actually always bigger than any designation. So any kind of glorification you may do of a person also. We take one quality and glorify it. But the person has many other qualities. So yes, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was uncompromising, but he was also much more. So I'll talk about two aspects of how he tried to give higher taste to people, tried to transform people's taste. Now, when we have transformed people's taste, how do we go about doing it? Now we at one level, we work on what's bad within us. And we work with what's good within us. That means if somebody has some bad taste, say some taste in some sensuality, something which is immoral, something which is sinful, then we have to work on that to give it up. But work with what's good. So if somebody has a taste for singing, somebody has a taste for music, somebody has a taste for decoration, somebody has likes and passion for speaking, somebody likes to go and meet people. Outgoing. So then, that's good. So work on what's bad in us, but then work with what's good in us. So the transformation of taste is not just a rejection of our present taste. It's also utilization of the present taste. So there are certain things which we all have to give up. But there are certain things which have to be utilized. So one of the things that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur very strongly innovative, you could say, is that use of dioramas in presenting Krishna Bhakti. If you consider the historical phase when Bhagavan Thakur appeared and shared Krishna Bhakti, he started the Lord Yama in 1919. And he, of course, initiated his first disciple in 1905-1906. And that time, both his guru, Gaurakishore Babaji, and his param guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, both of them were there on the planet. And they were just across. Gaurakishore, he was in Mayapur, Gaurakishore Babaji was on the other side of the river in Mayapur. And param guru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, was living in Kolkata at that time. So, he didn't take those who were aspiring for initiation to death. Why not? We had their blessings. And more importantly, spiritual master and disciple is a personal relationship. So, whoever they are inspired by, we need to get connected with them. But his real preaching started from 1919. So, 1919 to 1937, about 18 years, that was a big change. So, before that, he was preparing quite a lot in terms of he did a lot of austerities, chanted million names of Krishna and fasted very austere way. But then, when he relocated from Mayapur to Kolkata, Kolkata is the place where people are, and that is where we need to go if we want to reach people. So one of the things he started using was dioramas. This is the time when India was in a state of ferment. There was enormous political upheaval over there. The Indian independence struggle was slowly moving to an upper momentum. And religion was a very powerful force in India. And the political leaders were using religion also as a galvanizing force. But at the same time, religion was also an object of criticism in many ways. Oh, people are so old-fashioned, people are so superstitious, people are so unscientific. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, rather than focusing on the religious aspect of devotion, focused on the artistic aspect of devotion. So the dioramas were of sacred images. But if any of you have been to Mayapur, you will see even now in some of the Gaudiya mats, it's a diorama that I kept over there. And dioramas are basically of, say, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performing various pastimes, delivering Jagai and Madai, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showing his Vishwarupa, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as a small child eating dust. So like that, there are various pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and pastimes of Krishna with some philosophical message. Not many people would come to hear classes. There are certain people who are always ready to come for direct outreach. Come and hear classes and learn. But many people are not ready for that. And how we reach those people? So the dioramas where people could get to see something. And while seeing, there's an explanation. And far more people started coming to the temple because the diorama was in the temple premises. Because of that, they started coming to the temple. And actually, because they had some piety, they would also come to the deities and take darshan. If people have to come to the temple only to take darshan of the deities, then not many people will come. Many times when certain temples are famous, one thing about them is that they have a big beautiful architecture, they have big size, something special. Most people who come to the temple, they come to see the temple, not the deities. That's the difference. Deities just take the darshan of 1 or 2 minutes. Even in our own lives, if we had to come to the temple, more often than not, we come to associate with devotees. Yes, we want to take darshan of the deities, unless we have specific service of worshipping the deities. Just taking darshan is not the only purpose. So, basically, when we have to give taste to people, what it means is, either one thing is, this is the bhakti, and this is your taste, you have that taste, you come over here. But another way is that we expand the ambit of bhakti. So that whatever is existing taste within people, that intersects with bhakti. So people like to go on sightseeing, see something beautiful. So then have beautiful dioramas. And he personally spent a lot of time, energy and resources for making these dioramas.
So
he, that means when you have to transform the taste of people, we have to give people opportunities to experience higher taste within the taste that they are experiencing right now.
So within the taste,
they like music. And within their taste for music, we give a taste of bhakti music. If they like a taste for art, then within their taste for art, we give them the bhakti art. So another dramatic thing that Bhakti Sanskrit did was his theistic exhibitions. Now the theistic exhibitions were huge arrangements. Exhibitions on a big ground. And on that ground, there would be, remarkably, 50% of the exhibits we would classify today as mundane. The exhibits were of scientific progress, technological achievement, of some kind of innovation that I might have done some nearby village. So it is all about material things which were like material breakthroughs or material progress. And because of that, thousands and thousands of people would come. Even many of the dignitaries of Calcutta, they would come for those theistic exhibitions. The theistic exhibitions became like a high point in the annual calendar of Kolkata. And then the remaining 50% would be devotional exhibits. And they would arrange, if there's a big event, or a big, if you go into a fair, if you go into Disneyland or something like that, some fair, then there's one entrance, and there will be small ways out, but otherwise there's a long circle you go through. You go in and you come out. So people would go to see these theistic exhibitions, and the way would be such that you would also go to all the devotional exhibits. And there would be all these dioramas and other things, where the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the grace and the message of bhakti would be presented over there. So the idea is, people at that time were very attracted by science and technology and scientific and technological advancement. So Bhakti Sanskrit will use that to get people to come to Krishna. The idea is that we have to find out how we can connect people's mind with Krishna. How we can get people's minds to focus on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada at one time said, I have simply repeated the word of my spiritual master. I haven't changed even one thing. Another time, Prabhupada said that this whole Krishna consciousness movement has been practically invented by me. The whole Krishna consciousness movement. Now what did he mean? He speaks this in his lectures on the nectar of devotion, which he gave in Vrindavan. And here the point is, he is explaining this yena kena prakarena manaha Krishna nivesha. Somehow or the other, fix the mind of Krishna. And in that context, he says that it is the responsibility of the spiritual master to create ways and means for the disciples to fix the mind of Krishna. So rather than saying, you have to fix the mind of Krishna. Okay, how can you fix the mind of Krishna? Let me think. And it is the responsibility of the spiritual master to create ways and means to help the disciples fix the mind of Krishna. And one of the most popular, we could say, if you want to use the word innovations, of Srila Prabhupada in outreach was the Rath Yatra. Now, Rath Yatra was of course were done in Puri and many other places across the country, especially Orissa, Bengal. But doing Rath Yatra abroad on a day that is convenient for people at that place, that was a remarkable idea. And that helped the devotees utilize all their passion and resourcefulness, the hippie is like to do crazy things. And probably one of the crazy things is just dance on the streets. Now, if earlier they had danced on the streets, they would have got in trouble with the police. But now they were dancing on the streets and they were escorted by the police. So, Prabhupada, when he created Rath Yatra, it created a sensation among people. Among hippies, they loved it. Just coming in front and dancing and just going along the roads and then giving food and giving Krishna consciousness in various ways to people. So by this, Sri Prabhupada gave people the means by which they could fix the mind of Krishna. And London, the devotees had organized a big Rath Yatra once. And the devotees earlier had like a big in San Francisco and America, they had done Rath Yatras. And the devotees in London decided we'll make it bigger. And they made a much bigger Rath. But unfortunately, they didn't increase proportionately the strength of the wheels. So just before the Rath Yatra was about to start, or the incense started, the wheels crumbled. And the whole Rath Yatra was a disaster, a fiasco. Then the devotees wrote to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, was it because of our poor devotion that the Rath Yatra collapsed? Prabhupada replied that, not your pure devotion, it was your poor engineering. So what Prabhupada did was, yes, in the service of Krishna, look at the practices and fix the practices. So now Prabhupada presented Krishna consciousness in such an inclusive way that actually so many things which people would normally not have thought of as bhakti, Prabhupada included that. Now, one of the things we learn if we study language, especially the history of language, is that words have different meanings at different times. So, Prabhupada expanded the semantic scope of the word Sankirtan. Sankirtan traditionally meant doing Kirtan in front of the Lord. Harinagar Sankirtan means going out into the streets and doing Sankirtan. But Prabhupada expanded Sankirtan to include what? Book distribution, outreach. Speaking about Krishna, distributing books. Why you want Sankirtan? You're going on a Sankirtan bus party. Sankirtan bus party is Kirtan is one part of maybe distribution. So, young people like to do something adventurous, go to new places. So then, use that for serving Krishna. So basically, bhakti means that the most merciful people, their only purpose is to transform the degraded taste of being. So when we are also trying to practice bhakti ourselves, we have to see how much I can transform my taste. And when we are trying to give Krishna bhakti to others, we see, okay, how can I help this person to get taste for it? It is not that people, you do this activity, A, B, C, D. If you are doing this, you are a devotee. If you are not doing this, you are a demon. Not like that. Okay, what are you doing right now? How can, within what you are doing, how can it help you to get a taste for Krishna bhakti? So this is what the essence of outreach is. This was the first point. Can you repeat after me? The only purpose of the most merciful persons is to transform the degraded taste of people. So, I was talking about outreach. The first was the purpose of outreach. The second is the perspective in outreach. Perspective means how we see things, how we see people. And this was the quote which I'm going to speak is one of the most, you could say, counterintuitive quotes. And it required a lot of thought, and I look at the context and look at the other statements that Krishna Thakur had said, and then I was able to appreciate what he said. He says, the pure devotee sees that everyone is the spiritual master. Therefore, the pure devotee is the Jagatguru. Can you repeat after me? The pure devotee sees that everyone is the spiritual master. Therefore, the pure devotee is the Jagat Guru.
Therefore, the pure devotee is the Jagat Guru.
Now, what is going on? How do we see everyone as a spiritual master? And to be able to see everyone as a spiritual master makes us a Jagat Guru. We could understand this at three different levels. And if any of you would have some reflections, feel free to add that into your reflections. So, one understanding is that we see that Krishna can speak through us through anyone. That Krishna can inspire us, Krishna can instruct us through anyone. That is, we see Srila Prabhupada was distributing back to Godhead, and a postman, he suggested that, Swami, if you could throw your magazines, you should write books, you will keep the books. This is my spiritual master speaking. So, everyone is a spiritual master. I mean, literally, everyone is a spiritual master on the opera group. It means that Krishna, as the Jagat Guru, can speak through anyone. And one who sees the potential for Krishna to speak through anyone, that is the person who has the potential to be the Jagat Guru. So, to be able to see that Krishna can speak through anyone, that is one level understanding. That is the understanding, that is the level of consciousness that can also help us to reach out to him. Incidentally, about this postman or whoever who gave this suggestion to Prabhupada. I met Satsarup Maharaj in upstate New York. So, he has written this Lilamrit. And he is telling that among this Lilamrit has 6 volumes and then 1/7 is the appendix kind of volume. They said the last 5 volumes were easy to reach. The first volume easy to write, literally speaking. The first volume was very difficult to write. He says, why is that? He said, when it came to writing the first volume, when say everything connected with Prabhupada's pre-ISKCON life, every good thing, there are hundreds of people who say, I did that. So the person who suggested to Prabhupada that, I suggested that you should write books. So he said that the Prabhupada just told us, somebody suggested that to me. And I started my spiritual master speaking. But who was that? When he came to India, he said, over 100 people said, I told Swamiji that. So actually, to write a biography, often you don't need just to be the author, you actually need to become a detective. To find out who is speaking the truth and who is not speaking the truth. But anyway, the point is, That's one level of understanding. That Krishna can speak through anyone he wants. We see that level of Krishna consciousness. Another is that we see that even those who are assisting us in serving Krishna, they are also representatives of our spiritual master. You see that Prabhupada would often say to his disciples that all of you have been sent by my spiritual master to me. He did not just see them and they are serving me. He said that I am serving my spiritual master and they are assisting me in my service to my spiritual master. So therefore, they have been sent by my spiritual master. So in that sense, everyone is spiritual master. So if we have that vision of service, not a vision of lordship, then we can be the Jagat Gurus. The more powerful, the more influential we become, the more there is a tendency to become infatuated. So somebody who has to have the maturity to become the Jagat Guru, they should be able to see that everyone is actually serving my Guru, serving Krishna. Everyone is a spiritual master. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would often refer even to his disciples as my Prabhu. And he would often, that holds me, that I am a servant. That was the mood in which he would speak and write. My third level is what we can consider as the most important for outreach. See, everyone is a spiritual master means that ultimately each person is different. And we have to find out how that person can be connected with Krishna. And for that, we need to learn from that person. When Bhaktisiddhanta Srila Prabhupada came to the West, can I take first Bhaktisiddhanta for example? One of my friends has done his PhD in Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. did a lot of research in Bengal, going for looking for waste manuscripts and everything. So he showed me a big, you could call it like a pocket diary. And as glancing through it, it is amazing. It was Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's vocabulary book. He used to, in his 1910-1920, he was actually memorizing English words. Because one thing, the challenge in India is that if you are Indians, there are very few native English speakers. So how a language used to be spoken, you don't know that. You can read the language, you can write also, but how words are pronounced, how words are spoken. And the British who were there also, most of the British who were there, they were for colonial purposes. Now, very few British were philosophically interested with it. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur spent a lot of time and energy learning English. He was not just learning English, you could say that by his purity, by his pure intention to glorify Krishna through English, he was purifying the English language. So, he put in effort over there to see how best I can communicate. Similarly, when Prabhupada came to America, at that time, if you see, he stayed first at the house of Sally and Gopal Agarwal. They were his sponsors for the tour. And Sally Agarwal's interview was given in Nilambur, and there it is said that Swamiji was extremely interested in everything American. You know, if I was using a vacuum cleaner, how does a vacuum cleaner work? If I was using a washing machine, how did it work? So now when I first read it, it just didn't make any sense to me. So she said, the way she said that he was the most non-demanding guest that I ever had. So, Prabhupada, it seems, did not even ever push them to chant Hare Krishna or practice bhakti. Prabhupada sends up something, they're not really interested. So Prabhupada did not push them. So then I was talking with a senior devotee who has written a lot of Prabhupada. So who was telling that at that time Prabhupada was learning about the West. How do people live in the West? How do people think about the West? Think in the West. And through that learning, this first he had 2 month visa, 1 month he just stayed in Butler, Pennsylvania. And he was focusing entirely on just one or two programs in the whole 2 months. Focusing on learning about the West. So, if we have to teach someone something, we have to learn to help them learn. So, I'll repeat this one. We have to learn to help them learn. Because they come from a different background, a different perspective. So, everyone is a spiritual master. Doesn't mean that they will give Krishna to everyone. What Bhaktisiddhanta quote means is that they can teach us how we can teach them. If we have that learning mood, we will be able to understand how we can help them understand. And that requires commitment and compassion. For many people, their idea of teaching Krishna consciousness is you have like one script, and anyone you meet, download that script on that. And yes, some people may get attracted by that, but many may not. So, we have to understand how to help people understand. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, in another place, he says that, Prabhupada also reiterated the same thing, he says that people in the lower modes of nature, their minds are not functioning properly. They are almost like mad people. So, a related example we could take is, say, if a child has some learning disability, the child has dyslexia, then there is a normal method of teaching. But that method may not work for that child. Because some children, they just can't read letters. The letters seem to be all moving for them. And they look at it, they just can't read, it's all floating. So then, there are special techniques which are used to teach the children. So the parents have to learn how to help the children learn. So similarly, if we want to share Krishna Bhakti, we have to learn how to help people learn. And that's why in that sense, everyone is a spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada, again, we often see him as a person who is always really cutting fools and rascals and things like that. But if we interact with Prabhupada's disciples, I mean, they read their personal experiences, who had personal experience with Prabhupada. Prabhupada made everyone feel valued. Those who met Prabhupada, they felt Prabhupada really cared for me. So it was what attracted them. Clearly, he was a learned person, a spiritually evolved person. But he respected us, he told us, he understood us. So Prabhupada saw the spiritual spark in and he offered them the facility to come to this. So this, Prabhupada also adopted this. He used the terminology associated with drugs because drugs was very high. Drugs was very popular. So people wanted to go high and Prabhupada adopted stay high forever. So Prabhupada did these things. Similarly, somebody asked Prabhupada once, Swamiji, what is the bliss of Vaikuntha like? And this person just was stoned, coming down from drugs. And Prabhupada could have quoted Chinta, Mani Prakara, Sadma, Shukha, Bhavraksha. Now what would that person have understood? So Prabhupada said, Vaikuntha is like an ocean of LSD. An ocean of LSD. Oh wow. I want to go there. Now somebody who does not have that attitude that everyone is a spiritual master. Somebody doesn't have the attitude that I can learn from others or how to help them learn. That person says, what are you doing? Oh, drugs is tamasic. Vaikuntha is pure Shuddha Sattva. How can you compare the bliss of Vaikuntha with whatever tamasic pleasure of taking LSD? Where in the Shastra it says like this. The bliss of Vaikuntha is like an ocean of LSD. The person who asks this question misses the point. The point of outreach is not just to get it right. The point of outreach is to get it across. We may get something right entirely, but if people don't understand it, it's like a child has dyslexia and the teacher gives a perfect class according to normal standards, the child doesn't understand anything. The teacher got everything right, but got nothing across. So in Kali Yuga, people are all Mandas Mandana Tayo Mandar Bhavya Ayo Parita. So we are all in many ways deficient. In the capacity to learn spirituality, it's deficient. And thus, we need to learn how to help people learn. So what Prabhupada was doing was presenting Krishna Bhakti, the joy of Krishna Bhakti, in terms that would make sense to people. So for a person whose only conception of pleasure is taking drugs, then, yes, it's like an ocean of drugs. Oh, I'm going to get it across. And to get it across, we need to understand where people are. So in that sense, everyone is a spiritual master. If we are interacting with someone, it's not. Yes, we do want to share Krishna with them. But to share Krishna with them, we have to understand where they are coming from, what their needs are. And they will tell it to us if we hear from them. When I had started doing this in 2014, in Melbourne was the first place I had come. So I had met Isola Devamat Maharaj here. And he told me that if you want to connect with Western people, it's here to spend time with them. Just hear them speak. Just understand where they are coming from. So to the extent we do that, so we learn a lot. So I try to follow a principle, not all of them successful. So that on the Vyasasan I speak, off the Vyasasan I hear. So try to do that. Let people speak. Understand where they're coming from. The temptation to speak is very strong. Especially somebody who thinks of themselves as a preacher. It's a very strong temptation to start speaking. But how much of what we're speaking is relevant to people? We need to hear them, we understand that, then we speak. So see everyone as a spiritual master in the sense that ultimately the spiritual master connects us with Krishna. So they will give us the inputs about how we can connect with Krishna. If you think of, yes, I got this script, I downloaded this. Why is this person not recommended? Yes, that person is a team. If you start doing like this, then you're not going to connect with anyone. This was the second point. Can you repeat
after me? The second point.
The pure devotee sees that everyone is a spiritual master. Therefore, the pure devotee is the Jagat Guru. So let me go to the last point now. This is a quote which Prabhupada also had quoted. But in this context, I thought for outreach, the purpose, the perspective, and the process. So here Bhagavan Swami says that without shedding hundreds of gallons of hard-earned blood, we will never be able to make people understand the truth. So it's a very, very significant statement. Now, Prabhupada put it in different ways, and to get one soul to Krishna, we have to shed gallons of blood. It's essentially the same. But here, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur's stress is not that people are less intelligent, people don't understand. He's saying that we have to put this effort. It is for us to shed this much gallons of blood. That means, rather than saying that people are uninterested, people are fallen, people are degraded, we take the effort that where people are at, how can we get them to Krishna? So in every situation we are in, we always have a choice. Even if there is a very, very bad situation. See, most of us may have some expertise in this field or that field or that field. Some of them are good at singing, some of them are good at speaking, some of them are good at managing. We may have our particular expertise. But our mind makes us all expert in one thing. And that is, the mind makes us expert in blaming everything except ourselves. In blaming our situation for our condition. I'm short-tempered. I was at a temple and there was a devotee who used to just yell at everyone. And he was a prominent leader over there. And everybody was fried out by that. And then I was talking with this devotee. And he said, if people did what I told them, I wouldn't have yelled at them. So, instead of taking responsibility, well, people are not your slaves, and they have to do what you have to tell them, what you tell them. Even if we are the Muslim authority, you have to communicate properly. So if somebody doesn't take responsibility, why am I yelling at them? Because they're not doing what I'm telling them. Then, if one doesn't take responsibility, one blames the other, then we cannot change. So in today's age, it's very easy to blame others. If you are doing outreach, oh, people are so interested. Oh, it's Kaliyuga. What can you do with Kaliyuga? Nobody's going to come. Now, if we have that attitude, then we will not be able to reach people. So it is for us to take the initiative. It is for us to take the responsibility. It is for us to take the effort to reach people. And now reaching people is not just physically going to people. Reaching people is actually reaching people emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually. The effort that we have to share, the physical effort of reaching out to people is something, yes. We may travel from a distribution, we may travel for our traveling as a traveling teacher. We have to put in effort for that also. And both Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Srila Prabhupada were pioneers in that. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, when he had his disciples going abroad, it was a very, very bold thing. So he had no contacts, he did not have any big contacts. So he had his two disciples go from here abroad, from India to abroad, and they were fully funded. And he had to actually engage many devotees in India and fundraising just so that those devotees could be funded over there. Where they will stay, how they will get their prachar, how they will travel. Every single thing he arranged from India. And then he sent the disciples there. Now he was very much involved in it. In fact, every program that they had, actually, the speech, the talk that they would give over there, they would write it, they would send it to India, to Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would go through it, edit it,
and send it back. And then they would do that program. So,
especially now they have of course small informal programs, but sometimes they got opportunity to address some big university or some gathering of Lord or something like that. And put in a huge amount of effort. It actually drained the mission of God, you know, a lot, that whole endeavor. And it's not that they were not successful. They tried to reach certain elite kind of people. And they were successful in the sense that many people appreciated what they did. So Bhaktisiddhanta says, I'll talk about that in the end, how the legacy is continuing. But here the point is, putting an effort to reach to people. Srila Prabhupada, so one effort is of course, physically we have to reach them. We have to go where people are at. A devotee is tireless in outreach, but a devotee is not headless in outreach, or brainless. Not even tireless. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur said that, if you go for a program and nobody comes, what should we do? Does anyone remember? Yes?
Speak to the
boss. Yes. Be untiring. Never get disheartened. Speak to the walls. If you speak to the walls, you become beautiful. At the same time, when Prabhupada was speaking in India and people were not interested, Prabhupada was not satisfied speaking to the walls. Prabhupada actually took the whole effort to go from India to America. All the way. And thus, he found in America an audience that was receptive. So in spirit, a devotee is untiring, is tireless. But in actual practice, a devotee is intelligent. See what works and what doesn't work. And that's how a devotee shares Krishna consciousness. Now, we have to follow our spiritual guides. We have to follow our spiritual masters. We have to follow our spiritual acharyas. But we have to follow them in an intelligent way. So, we have to reach them. Now when Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, the first meeting with Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada just was a young man, first came to the temple. And it's amazing. What did Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur tell him? Yeah, you are educated, a young man. Why don't you preach the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all over the world? Prabhupada, it was Abhay that is speaking about. What is this? And then later on I talked with some devotees again, who had done a lot of research in Prabhupada's life and writings, written about Prabhupada. So I asked him, wasn't this like a one-time incident that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur spoke this only to Abhay, who became Prabhupada later on? He said, no. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur was so eager that Krishna consciousness spread, he would look at everyone as a potential for receiving and sharing Krishna. So that go to the West and preach, this was not just Prabhupada's instruction for Prabhupada. It was like an instruction for all his disciples. And anybody who could do anything about it, Prabhupada would express that desire. Of course, directly speaking that, there's no record as of now what I have come across, where Prabhupada said like directly the first meeting to someone like that. But still, point was, you saw the opportunity, yes, you should share. So now, Prabhupada himself at one point said that, we are like salespeople for Krishna consciousness. And he said, every salesperson has their own technique for selling. The important thing is not to follow the technique. The important thing is to sell the product. So if you consider in many ways, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, their sales technique was quite different. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, there's very little direct criticism of Western culture. There's a criticism of empiricism. He says many places that the materialistic phenomena cannot stretch to the absolute truth. Empiricism, the pratyaksha pramana as a means to understand the absolute. He said that you cannot do that. You cannot understand it. But if you read the lecture, that Santa who gave his disciples when they were going abroad. One thing which strikes very significantly is that he says, be respectful to people. He says that in the West, they're going to UK actually, so in UK, people think that they're very progressive because they have got so much scientific and technological advancement. And Makran Kapoor doesn't follow this and say that they're push, they think he's push. He says, because they think they're so progressive, they expect respect. And we need to, with humility, offer them that respect. But then we have to show them that there's another kind of progress that can be got only by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have come to give them that. So he said, don't minimize, don't criticize what they have achieved. Appreciate that. And also tell them that there's more to achieve. So now again, sometimes we reduce Prabhupada to a person who's always telling scientists are fools and rascals. Now if you look at Prabhupada, it was not always like that. I was talking with Giriraj Maharaj recently. Giriraj Maharaj has written a book on Prabhupada's battle to get the Juhu temple. It's a magnificent book. So it's an 800 page, two volumes. It's going to come out soon. So he says that he asked Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was in the famous talks in Venice Beach, where from that light comes from light has come out that book. So he asked Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, when you speak about scientists, he said that you often use strong words. Fools and rascals. So they were going to organize a big conference in 1976 about life comes from life. So when we talk with scientists, should we speak like that? And Giriraj Maharaj said, Prabhupada looked horrified. He said, obviously not. He should be polite, courteous, respectful, be like gentlemen, speak like gentlemen. So now, what is going on over here? A lot is dependent on context. And when you take statements out of context, it can create a lot of misrepresentation. So Prabhupada, when speaking to his intimate disciples, he wanted to disabuse them of whatever faith they may have in science as a tool to ultimate knowledge. But Prabhupada was not against science at all. Prabhupada used science. He used printing press, he used airplanes, and he used dictaphones. And he where his work, we acknowledge that it worked. Prabhupada says that we are not against science, scientist spirit of knowing. We are against the atheism. So the point which I'm making over here is that we have to give credit where it is due. And it is shed gallons of blood. Often that gallons of blood that we have shared is not so much in convincing others, but it is also in changing our preconceptions. We have to, we often have this is right, this is wrong. And we have to change our preconceptions. So if we don't do that, then we impose our preconception on people and categorize, label, demonize people and people go away. So from a functional perspective, after traveling across the world for several years and interacting with many different people, I have come up with a functional definition of humility. And humility means to acknowledge the complexity of reality. The complexity of reality. Things are not as simple as you think. If somebody is doing something, why are they doing like that? There could be many reasons. We will assign one reason. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is to intellectually reach people. So why don't you think like this? You just say, this is wrong. No, but that's what is right for them at that time. They got some experience because of which they think it is right. So we have to be sensitive, we have to be respectful. A lot of effort in outreach is in increasing our own sensitivity, increasing our own non-judgmentality, so that we can connect with people before we alienate them. As preachers, often sometimes we feel proud. I brought this person to Krishna. I brought this person to Krishna. I brought so many souls to Krishna. Now we may proudly take account of that. But All of us have no count of how many people did not come to Krishna because of us.
Because of the way we spoke, maybe we were judgmental, we were dismissive, we were critical, we were insensitive, we were irresponsible.
So many people may have not come to Krishna because of us. So, that ocean of the gallons of blood that has to be shed, has to be shed in terms of increasing our open-mindedness, increasing our sensitivity, by which we can reach people where they are, and then help them come towards Krishna. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur is a whole mood that they deserve, they think they are progressive, they expect respect, give them respect. Tante Nidhaya, so Vishnu Shikha also says that if you meet a wealthy person, you meet a powerful person, just offer obeisances to that person. He says, you are so glorious, you are so wealthy, you are so famous. And then, he says, now give up all your nonsense and take the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So now, this is Prabhupada paraphrasing it, but the idea is, if people do not feel accepted and respected where they are at, they will not come to us. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur would go out of his way to accept and respect people. When
there was
a prominent official in the Indian government was going to come, they had their viceroy and then they had like governor general or something of each of the principalities. So, when that was, he was going to come, the governor general of that, the Bengal principality was going to come to Mayapur, where Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had his center. At that time, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur arranged everything for him in impeccable fashion. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur had all his sannyasi disciples dressed in shirt and pant. He himself dressed in shirt and pant. And he had them take them around everywhere and show them all the places. So he made, if somebody is coming to us, we try to make them as comfortable as possible so that they can come close to Krishna. So that is where we have to shed blood. When we had this beautiful temple, we got a big place in LA, that time a big place, or like, so there was actually a church and they had pews over there. And when we got the church, Prabhupada told the devotees that keep the pews. And Prabhupada said, let people come in with their shoes. No need to ask them to remove shoes. Come in with their shoes and let them hear talks about Krishna consciousness. And I just have the deities elsewhere. Of course, later on, in our movement couldn't continue at that pace. So we didn't have any other place for the deities, and because we needed a big place, so they wanted to remove the pews from there. But Prabhupada wanted to make Krishna conscious as comfortable as possible for people. And Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur also had that mood. So, unless people feel accepted, respected, people feel that coming to Krishna consciousness is comfortable, they're not going to come to it. And creating that facility is our responsibility. That is where we have to shed blood. So, when Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and then he would have constructed, maybe in all these buildings, this long building, when the long building was constructed in Mayapur, if you go to Mayapur, there is this building. Long, it's called a long building also. At that time, it was one of the longest buildings in Bengal. Now, of course, there are much bigger buildings. But to try to construct that at that time was a big difficulty. So, but then Prabhupada in lectures, he said that as far as we are concerned, we can simply eat some khichdi and chant. But if that is what we do, people will not come. They need facilities. They need to have a comfortable place to stay so that they can hear about Krishna. That is for them, we are building these temples. We are building, not the temple, but the temple also, we are building guest houses. So Prabhupada said that actually it is we who have to take the effort to make Krishna consciousness as easy, as accessible, as comfortable as possible. Sometimes we think preaching in an uncompromising way means make people as uncomfortable as possible. This is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, everything about you is wrong, unless you surrender to me. If you do that, very, very few people are willing to come. So I'll conclude with one example of this comfort. What does it mean to share blood? So suppose somebody is out in the cold, the weather is cold and they're shivering, and they are poor and they just got one tattered cloth. It's thin and tattered and can barely offer any protection for cold. And then we go to them and we tell them, actually, this cloth is so torn and tattered, give it up. I will give you a very warm, woolen, cozy robe. You put that and you'll be comforted. Now, our intention may be very good. But for that person, that cloth is the only thing that is protecting them from cold. Even it is protecting them very little, but it is protecting them. If you tell them, give up that cloth, they may oppose it. Now, they say that that cloth is not helping you, it's hurting you. No, they won't give it up. But if where they are at, just take this cloth. Take this, put it around. How does it feel? Oh, hey, this is good. As they start feeling the warmth, as they start feeling the comfort, then after a period of time, they will just think, this cloth inside I'm hearing. It's helping me. She's not protecting me. They will themselves cast it aside. So if we ask them to cast it aside first and then take our cloth, they will instinct to do it. But if we give them our cloth and let them experience the warmth, then they will themselves give up that earlier cloth, torn that cloth. So this cloth, it applies to our conceptions. Our conception of what is comfortable, our conception of what is spiritual. So, now sometimes if somebody says everything is one, immediately say, that's my body, you're my body. Now actually, to call people Mayavadi is to give them too much credit. Why too much credit? Because most Mayavad is its own way, quite a complicated philosophy. And most people, they just heard someone say everything is one, and today the age of conflict and war and violence, everything is one, very nice, everything is one. Most people whom we call as Mayavadis, they have no idea what is Maya. So, actually, they have done something, maybe they did some meditation, they did something and they experienced something. So, what happens is, because they have experienced something, see, people who are in Rajas and Tamas, if anything gives them a little experience of support, for them that is so special. I got so much relief by that. So for them, that whatever conception they have, whatever practice they have done, whatever, it is like their blanket. It is like their cloth which is protecting. Even that cloth is torn and tattered. You ask them, how does this philosophy make sense? How does this experience make sense? They say, actually, nothing will make sense for them. Philosophically, logically. But still, they follow it because they experience something over there. Some relief from Rajas and Tamas. So if you tell them this is nonsense, give it up. Then, if you're telling them to give up the only cloth that is protecting them from cold, just let them, give them the warm, cozy blanket of Krishna consciousness. Just let them experience Krishna consciousness in a non-threatening, non-imposing, non-judgmental way. Let them come to Krishna. Let them experience Krishna. And they experience Krishna, oh, this is so wonderful. Why do you need anything else? This is so wonderful. I want to experience this more. They will themselves give up their previous conceptions. Most people are not philosophical. And most people, even when they come to spirituality, it is not because of philosophy. There are four kinds of people who come to Krishna. Those who are distressed, those who are distressed, those who are distressed, and those who are distressed. So, for most people, philosophy is not what is bringing them. They have some philosophical conception, but there is one small part of their life. and it is not even a major part of their life. But when we criticize it, they think, hey, how dare you call me wrong? And then they become very defensive and they are alienated. So if philosophy is not an important part of their life, it is not an important part of why they are exploring spirituality, then we also don't have to make pointing out the wrongness or error in their philosophy a major part of our condition. Just connect them in a way that makes them comfortable. Bhakti Sanjay Thakur went to such an extreme that he said that if some very foolish people are ready to come to the temple, if we have to cook meat for them, we cook meat in people. Not that meat, not that we will eat meat. But he said, no, I'm not telling this by me, we will cook meat. Now, of course, we don't want to do that. That's not the point. But he is saying that it is our responsibility to make people feel comfortable in their congregation. That is where we need to shed gallons of blood. And when we do that, the legacy spreads. So, Bhakti Sanjay Thakur, at one level, we could say his mission was not so successful. Gauriya Math, there are 67 centers at its peak, 64 in India, and 3 outside India. One in Rangoon, one in Hamburg, and one in London. But then after his departure, it all crumbled. But that's only an external mission. It was his mission that was continued by Shri Prabhupada. And even for the most glorious mission, actually, the right time has to come. The right deshakala patra is required. Now, if we see that a stage, only somebody is dancing. And say one person comes and dances for excellently for 5 minutes. And another person comes and dances for 2 hours. You may say the person dances for 2 hours so much more. It's a greater dancer. But then if we come to know that the person who is dancing for 5 minutes, actually below the floor all glass was there. Broken glass. And on that broken glass they dance for 5 minutes. And they say, my God. And to dance on broken glass for 5 minutes is extremely difficult. The floor is nice. Dance for 2 hours there also is laudable, but it's much easier. So when Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur was preaching, at that time the whole floor was like strewn with broken glass. Neither India nor the West was receptive. India was completely enamored by political change and economic progress. And economic is anti progress. And the West, especially UK, at that time, because the Second World War was just approaching and they had this colonial idea that we are delivering the people who are all dark and uncivilized. And in fact, Oscar Wilde, I think, has said that famously that it is the white man's burden to civilize all the uncivilized people of humanity. So, they had no receptivity. So, it was like, the lack of receptivity in India and America and UK both. That was like dancing on glass floors. So in spite of that, he and his followers made 367 centers. It's a laudable. When Prabhupada came to America, that was the time there was a tremendous interest in Indian spirituality. That is a tremendous interest because of various reasons. But people were open to spirituality and people were fed up with their materialistic way of life. So now Prabhupada told Krishna, Om, Nachao, Nachao, Prabhu, Nachao, Semate. Please make me dance. And Krishna not only made Prabhupada dance, but Krishna made Prabhupada the perfect stage to dance. Prabhupada came to America just at the right time. And Prabhupada asked, no, here's the spiritual master, send disciples to London. Why did you go to America? So Prabhupada gave different answers at different times. One answer, of course, we know that by that time the center of influence of the Second World War had shifted. Before UK was ruling the whole world. So they said that from UK, the sun never sets. It was the pride of the British Empire. But within a few years, things changed and the sun never rises there. It's so dark all the time over it. Hardly ever. Things have changed. So UK, America had become the main center of power. And so Prabhupada said, go to America, West, but he went to a different place in the West. Rather than Prabhupada, in his own disarming humility, he said that if my spiritual master said they couldn't succeed, but my chances of succeeding are very less. Because if I had to fail, let me fail trying in some other place. Maybe there's a better chance of success. That was his humility. Prabhupada went to New York just us at the right time. When? Because of the counterculture, people are extremely receptive. Of course, Prabhupada had great challenges. They were receptive spiritually, in terms of knowing spiritually, but culturally, they were so far away. It was like Prabhupada had to cross an ocean to reach them. But see, Prabhupada did that remarkably. So once Prabhupada asked that Bhaktisvana Thakur preached in Bengal, Bhaktisvana Thakur preached in India, you preached all over the world. Therefore, you are greater than all of them. Prabhupada became very, very grieved. He says, never think of this. He said, it is the joy of the Father when the Son does better than the Father. And it is by their mercy that I have been able to do whatever I have done. So they did the groundwork. Prabhupada said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the founder of the modern day Krishna consciousness movement, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the founder of the institutional structure for that movement. And Prabhupada carried both of them, the institution and the movement, across the world. So Prabhupada, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the main legacy that he got. At one time, some of his god brothers were criticizing Prabhupada for not having done, for having done something different from what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing. And Prabhupada said, that ask them who has built more temples than me, who has written more books than me, who has got more disciples than me. Then Prabhupada said, gravely, I have inherited the legacy of my spiritual master. That's very interesting, because in terms of legacy, Prabhupada got nothing from the spiritual master. There was not a single assistant for his teaching, not a single rupee from the Gaudiya Math, not even an institutional letter saying that he's coming from this organization. Prabhupada got nothing at all. But what do you mean by the legacy? The greatest legacy of the spiritual master is not in terms of things, resources. The greatest legacy of the spiritual master is the desire to glorify Krishna. The desire to get everyone to love Krishna. Bhaktisvana Thakur gave that desire to Shri Prabhupada. And from that desire, books manifested, disciples manifested, temples manifested. So that is the legacy that is coming down from the Shishya Parampara. So we can all pray, Shri Bhaktisvana Thakur today, that he enrich us also with this legacy. The legacy of the desire to glorify Krishna. If we have the desire to glorify Krishna, our life will be enriched, and through us, the lives of many, many others will also be enriched. So I'll quickly summarize what I spoke today. I spoke on the theme of Bhaktisvana Thakur's three instructions on outreach. The purpose, the perspective, and the process. In the purpose, I said, the only purpose of the most merciful persons is to transform the degraded taste of people. So our purpose is to think, how can I help people get the higher taste of Krishna Bhakti? So we work with the taste that they have at present and connect those tastes with Krishna. Expand the ambit of Krishna Bhakti so that include some of their existing tastes. I give the examples of Bhaktisvana Thakur in the diorama and the three situations. To dotate people's visual and technological tastes. And then I talk about Prabhupada using Pratyatra as a means to dotate young people's tendency to do far out things like dancing on the streets. So rather than saying people have no taste, we try to expand the ambit of Krishna Bhakti. Then second instruction was that the pure devotees see everyone as the spiritual master. Therefore, pure devotees can be our Jagat Gurus. So what this means is, so at three levels. First is that pure devotees see that Krishna can speak to anyone. Just like Prabhupada saw, his Guru speaking to the postman who said, write books. Another is, those who are assisting us in serving Krishna, Prabhupada saw his disciples also as being sent by his spiritual master. And thirdly, the spiritual master connects us with Krishna. So, how to connect people with Krishna? People themselves will connect to us. We have to understand how to make them understand. Like a child with learning disabilities, the parents have to learn how to help the child to learn. So rather than simply judging people and condemning them for not being interested, we have to spend time understanding where they are coming from. Then we will be able to help them learn.
And last point was, without shedding gallons of hard-earned blood, we cannot help people. We cannot make people understand the truth. So that gallons of blood is in terms of not just imposing our script on people, but taking the effort to reach them where they are. Reach them physically, reach them emotionally, reach them culturally, reach them intellectually, reach them spiritually. So, Krishna consciousness has to be made as accessible and comfortable for people as possible. So, Bhaktivedanta Thakur himself was ready to dress in Western clothes so that the head of state of Bengal, when he came, he would feel comfortable there. So, Prabhupada was ready to have views so that people could come and shoes him. Similarly, if people are having some preconceptions, instead of criticizing their preconceptions, see, this is we see that this is the tattered, torn, thin cloth that is sheltering them from the cold of rajas and tamas. They are getting some suffering from this. So telling them to give it up, okay, just take this. Give them this thick cloth, give them the experience of Krishna Bhakti, and then they will themselves put away the old cloth. So rather than countering their misconceptions, just give them an experience of Krishna. They themselves give their misconceptions. And the legacy that Srila Prabhupada got from Bhaktivedanta Thakur is that in the desire to glorify Krishna, from that everything else manifested. We too can pray Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur on this day that he enrich our heart with the desire to glorify Krishna. Srila Bhaktivedanta Thakur ki
jai.
Sabhaksan Shakur Abhidhav Mahamahatsav Ki
Jai.